Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Wednesday, the 10th of the month, and we have a very, very large show today. So we're going to begin in the first hour with international news that I think is quite pertinent, as well as national news. And then at 11 o'clock, we're going to be speaking to Anthony Maranti, who's a candidate for mayor in the city of Yonkers. And I'm not sure if he's going to be on for a half an hour or an hour, but whatever it is, we'll jump hoops whenever we need to in order to comply with our guests. So let's start off on a very, very unique day. And that is what happened and what took place in the Vatican. It seems two popes were on the same stage, which is unbelievable. So it was a rare day at the Vatican today as two popes shared the limelight in St. Peter's Square. We had Pope Francis and His Holiness Pope Tewodros II of the Coptic Orthodox Church. Tewodros, dressed in black robes, was the guest of honor at Francis's general audience in a rainy St. Peter's Square, and the two sat near each other and delivered a joint blessing at the end. Tewodros, who's 70, is at the Vatican to mark the 50th anniversary of the first meeting between a Roman Pope and a Coptic Pope, which took place between their respective predecessors, Shenouda III and Paul VI in 1973. In his greeting to Tewodros, Francis recalled the 20 Egyptian Copts who were kidnapped and beheaded on a beach in Libya by the Islamic State in 2015. So the Pope said, "Martyrs of the Coptic Church are ours too." And Francis, as you know, is 86 years of age. So I feel like a youngster. I'm at 73. Anyway, the 20 Copts and one Ghanaian Christian were lined up on a Libyan beach in orange jumpsuits before they were executed in the Libyan city of Sirte, which Islamic State controlled between 2015 and 2017. So the Islamist group posted a video of the killings showing the men praying to Jesus as they died. And the victims, whose bodies were returned to Egypt in 2018, were among the many poor Egyptians who risked their lives to find work in the lawless chaos of Libya following the downfall of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011 and the civil war. So Copts comprise about 10% of Egypt's mostly Muslim population, and there are small Coptic Christian communities throughout the Middle East and Africa. They have long been attacked by Islamist militants who see them as heretics. Coptic Orthodox Christians trace their origins to St. Mark the Apostle. Tewodros is due to have a private meeting with Francis on Thursday and visit the Vatican department that promotes Christian unity. So really an unbelievable event, which is absolutely fascinating. Let's see what else is going on around the world. Bear with me a second here. I have to get to all the notes. Well, early this morning, the Ukraine had issued a statement saying that their Russian brigade is fleeing the Bakhmut outskirts. So out of Kiev, we hear that a Ukrainian military unit today said it had routed a Russian infantry brigade from territory near Bakhmut, claiming to confirm an account by the head of Russia's Wagner private army that the Russian forces had fled. Moscow has not commented on the reports from either side that its 72nd separate motor rifle brigade had abandoned the positions of the southwestern outskirts of Bakhmut. Well, the Russian Ministry of Defense did not immediately reply to a request from Reuters for comment, and Reuters could not independently confirm the situation in the area. So a Russian brigade is typically formed of several thousand troops. The eastern Ukrainian city has been the primary target of Moscow's huge winter offensive and scene of the bloodiest ground combat in Europe since World War II. A Russian mercenary boss, Yevgeny Prigozhin, who has repeatedly accused Moscow's regular armed forces of failing to adequately support his private army that led the fight in Bakhmut, said on Tuesday that the Russian brigade had abandoned its positions. "Our army is fleeing. 72nd Brigade pissed away 3 square kilometers this morning, where I had lost about 500 men," Prigozhin had said. In a statement overnight, Ukraine's 3rd Separate Assault Brigade said, quote, "It's official. Prigozhin's report about the flight of Russia's 72nd Independent Motorized Rifle Brigade from near Bakhmut and the 500 corpses of Russians left behind is true." Well, the 3rd Assault Brigade is grateful for the publicity about our success at the front. Early on Wednesday, the unit, formed from Ukraine's nationalist Azov Battalion, reposted a video of one of Azov's founders, Andriy Biletsky, who said his forces had defeated, quote-unquote, the Russian brigade. Quote, "In fact, the 6th and 7th squadrons of the brigade were almost entirely destroyed. Brigade intelligence was destroyed. Large numbers of fighting vehicles were destroyed. A considerable number of prisoners were taken," he said. Quote, "The attacks were implemented within a territory 3 kilometers wide and 2.6 kilometers deep, and this entire territory is completely liberated from the Russian occupying forces." Well, Ukraine's general staff, which typically withholds such detail from its regular reports, gave no specific account of fighting in the area, apart from saying that Russia had, quote, conducted an unsuccessful offensive in the city of Bakhmut. Oh, gosh. It's just unbelievable. Now, we got further reports. It seems that Russia's war on Ukraine continues, of course. So the Russian infantry brigade near Bakhmut is seriously damaged, so says Ukraine. Well, Ukraine's military said on Wednesday its forces had seriously damaged, though not destroyed, Russia's 72nd Separate Motor Rifle Brigade near Bakhmut, and that the eastern city remained Moscow's main target. Well, Russian forces are planning to evacuate more than 3,000 workers from the town that serves the occupied Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, resulting in a, quote, catastrophic lack, end quote, of personnel, Ukraine's state-owned Energoatom company had said. European Union states were holding a first discussion on Wednesday on proposed new sanctions over Russia's war in Ukraine that would target Chinese and Iranian firms and allow export curbs on third countries for busting trade restrictions. A filing point on the Druzhba pipeline in a Russian region bordering Ukraine has been attacked, the TASS news agency reported, citing Russia's oil pipeline Transneft. Well, two drones tried to attack a military facility in Russia's Voronezh area region, but failed, and that's what the region's governor had said. Russia's air defense forces shot down an enemy drone in the Kursk region bordering Ukraine, its governor had said, adding that falling debris damaged a gas pipeline and a house. Two Russian soldiers from Kamchatka in the Far East have been sentenced to 2.5 years each in prison for refusing to fight in Ukraine, human rights group OVD Info had said. Well, the Kremlin said that Poland's decision to rename the Russian city of Kaliningrad in its official documents was a hostile act, quote unquote, as bilateral ties continue to fray over the war in Ukraine. Poland summoned Russia's ambassador over an incident on Friday involving a Russian fighter jet and a Polish border guard aircraft over the Black Sea, a spokesman for the Polish Foreign Ministry had said. And Armand Soldin, a 32-year-old video journalist for Agence France-Presse, AFP, in Ukraine, was killed on Tuesday by Grad rocket fire near Chasiv Yar in eastern Ukraine, Agence France-Presse said on Twitter, citing Agence France-Presse colleagues who witnessed the incident. Oh, God. It just doesn't quit. It's absolutely frightening what's going on. It really is. It's unbelievable. The death toll is huge. Very, very frightening stuff. Okay, let's move on. Let's go back to what's going on with Kaliningrad. The Kremlin called the Polish decision to rename Kaliningrad a hostile act. Well, it seems that the Kremlin said on Wednesday that Poland's decision to rename the Russian city of Kaliningrad in its official documents as a hostile act, quote-unquote, as bilateral ties continue to fray over the war in Ukraine. Kaliningrad was known by the German name of Königsberg, until after World War II, when it was annexed by the Soviet Union and renamed to honor the Soviet politician Mikhail Kalinin. Well, Warsaw said on Tuesday that Kalinin's connection to the 1940 Katyn massacre, when thousands of Polish military officers were executed by Soviet forces, had negative connotations, and that the city should now be referred to as Kolowice, its name when it was ruled by the Kingdom of Poland in centuries. Well, the current Russian name of the city is an artificial baptism unrelated to either the city or the region, Poland's Committee on Geographical Standardization had said. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said the decision, quote, bordered on madness, end quote. Quote, he says, we know that throughout history, Poland has slipped from time to time into this madness of hatred toward Russians, he told a daily news briefing. Well, relations between Poland and Russia have historically often been very strained, including during and after World War II. Well, Moscow says it liberated Poland when its forces drove out Nazi German forces at the end of the war. And most Poles believe the Soviet Union replaced Nazi occupation with another form of repression. Now, more recently, Poland, a member of the NATO military alliance, has strongly backed Ukraine after Russia's invasion on February 24 of 2022 and has stepped up the demolition of memorials to fallen Soviet troops across the country. Very, very telling, to say the least. Well, I know my father was born in Poland, and the history there is absolutely outrageous. And the Germans and the Russians made fodder of Poland. It's always in between these two powerful groups, and they suffered immeasurably. And I think even to this day, the history is just so deep. It's really very, very frightening. Well, let's hear the latest. Russia is going to evacuate more Zaporizhia nuclear workers. That's what Ukraine's Energoatom had said. Russian forces are planning to evacuate more than 3,000 workers from the town that serves the occupied Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, resulting in a catastrophic lack, quote-unquote, of personnel. Ukraine's state-owned Energoatom company had said today. Well, last week, the head of the United Nations nuclear power watchdog, Rafael Grossi, said the situation around the Russian-held nuclear station had become potentially dangerous after Moscow-installed officials began evacuating people from nearby areas. Well, Russia's TASS news, a state news agency, said on Monday that Moscow installed governor of the Russia-controlled part of the surrounding region had suspended operations at the plant. Ukraine's Energoatom said that it had received information about preparations for the evacuation of about 3,100 people from the southern city of Enerhoda, including 2,700 workers who had signed contracts with a Russian-installed company. While the Russian occupiers are proving their inability to ensure the occupation and the operation of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, as there is now a catastrophic lack of qualified personnel, it said in a statement on the Telegram messaging service. Even those Ukrainian workers who, having signed shameful contracts, are going to be evacuated soon. And this will exacerbate the already extremely urgent issue of having a sufficient number of personnel to ensure the safety of operation of the NPP or nuclear power plant, even in the current shutdown state. Well, Reuters was not able to independently verify the reports. Russia did not immediately comment. Ukraine is widely expected to soon launch a counteroffensive to try to push back Russian forces, and commentators say retaking the whole of the Zaporizhzhia region is one of its aims. Well, Russian forces seized the Zaporizhzhia power plant after President Vladimir Putin launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February 2022. Exchanges of fire have frequently occurred near the facility, with each side blaming the other. Very frightening, to say the least. Now, let's see what else is going on in Europe. Spain's swimming pools feel the heat as water supplies are dwindling. From Vacarisas in Spain, many people were drawn to the town of Vacarisas near Barcelona in the 1970s by the suburban dream of homes with large gardens and swimming pools to provide respite during long, hot summers. Well, but now that lifestyle is under threat as a severe drought forces authorities to reach for increasingly stringent measures to conserve water, including restrictions on filling pools. A law expected to come into force in coming days will bar residents in the northeastern region of Catalonia, including Vacarisas, from refilling empty pools, even as an abnormally warm summer suggests the coming summer will be equal in ferocity to last year's, one of the hottest on record. The law will not apply to public pools or hotels. Water management is becoming a hot topic as Spain gears up for regional and municipal elections this month and a national vote later in the year as farmers and other industries vie for an increasingly scarce resource. Well, Spain has one swimming pool for every 37 residents, and these two are now in spotlight. In Vacarisas, a scattered town of more than a dozen subdivisions with views of the Montserrat and mountain range, residents are bracing for another difficult summer after enduring 16-hour water cuts last year when aquifers ran dry. Mayor Antoni Massana called the pool restrictions a necessary measure, quote-unquote, and stressed that the town had worked to drill new wells. Quote, due to climate change, we are seeing less and less rain and water. What we have to do is to rethink, to adapt our model to a new reality, Massana had said. Catalonia is one of the most parched regions in Spain, with some reservoirs at just 7% of their capacity. This April was the warmest and driest in Spain since records began in 1961, according to the meteorological agency AEMET. Well, Vacarisas has gained regional notoriety for its quantity of pools, with a population of 7,000 and more than 1,500 registered pools, there is one for every 5 residents, although in urban legend, that amount has multiplied. If you go anywhere, people ask you where you are from, and when you say Vacarisas, they say, oh, the town with 30,000 pools, said Antonio Leon Garcia, a local resident, quote, it starts getting annoying, end quote. While the swimming pool has been empty for 5 years since her children grew up, Garcia, 61, says the town has been stigmatized unfairly for its pools. Most pools in the town are rarely refilled, and if they are, it is normally with water trucked in out of town, she said. pools are being used as a scapegoat for a lack of coherent water policy in Spain, she said. Authorities should invest in more desalinization and purification plants to supplement aquifers and reservoirs, she said. It is a sentiment shared by Gonzalo de la Camara, the director of the IE Center for Water and Climate Adaption in Madrid. While the use of water to fill swimming pools during a drought is irresponsible, the bulk of Spain's water resources are taken by the agriculture sector, accounting for 70% of water usage, she said. Well, according to De La Camara, Spain lacks centralized policies on water management that could provide incentives for farmers to use more expensive desalinated water for irrigation, with decisions on water rates falling on local town councils. It is a system, quote, that's susceptible to obscene modifications during pre-election periods in which all the mayors promise cheaper water in a context of climate change and drought, he adds. Well, on the islands of Mallorca, an average of 17 pools were built a week, or 880 a year in 2015 to 2021, according to a study by the environmental NGO Terra Ferida. Well, Marcia Blasquez, a geography professor at the Universitat de les Illes Balears, said that the proliferation of pools was linked to a property boom in second homes, mainly in Northern Europeans, or for Northern Europeans. So seeking to stem the tide, Balearic government in December limited the construction of new pools in the countryside to one per property with a water volume cap. In Catalonia, the new law made an exception for public pools or those in hotels or large building complexes, following pressure from local mayors who argued that public pools act as, quote, climate shelters, quote, unquote, in a country that is expected to experience increasingly sweltering summers. Vacarisas, meanwhile, continues to sell the suburban dream on an empty plot for sale near Garcia's house. An advertisement showing a house with a pool reads, quote, an ideal place to build your future. So that's the story there. Now, let's just look at some other things here so we could follow up on what's going on. 1 second here. Now, let's look at what's going on in China. China's aircraft carrier, the Shandong, returns home to home port after a show of might. It seems that out of Beijing, we hear that China's military said on Wednesday that the aircraft carrier Shandong had returned to its home port in Hainan in recent days after a month-long voyage that included transits around Taiwan for drills and a flex of muscles as far out as the Western Pacific. This year, the Shandong has been spotted in the Taiwan Strait, the Bashi Channel between Taiwan and the Philippines, and even as far as Guam. In early April, it took part in drills that simulated attacks by fighter jet planes, jets launched from an aircraft carrier on democratically governed Taiwan for the first time. Well, the show of force came after Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen met U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Kevin McCarthy, angering Beijing, which viewed the meeting as interference in China's internal affairs and U.S. support for Taiwan's separate identity from China. Well, the Shandong took part in a security patrol around the island of Taiwan as part of the, quote, joint sword, end quote, military exercise, the Southern Theater Command of China's People's Liberation Army said in a statement. Well, the Shandong group carrier, for the first time in a formation and of scale, went to the waters of the Western Pacific, it added. The carrier commissioned back in 2019 was featured or has featured prominently in China's military propaganda. During the April drills, China showed extensive images of the Shandong and its fighter jets being launched from the carrier. Days after China ended its latest war games around the island, the U.S. warship USS Milius sailed through the Taiwan Strait in what the U.S. Navy described as a, quote, routine, end quote, transit. In March of 2022, the Shandong, one of China's two operational carriers, sailed through the Taiwan Strait just hours before the Chinese and U.S. presidents were due to talk. Well, China has revamped up military pressure in recent days and years to try to force Taiwan to accept Chinese sovereignty, and Beijing has never renounced the use of force to bring the island under its control. Now let's look at what else is happening here. Let's look at what's happening on the market, the stock market. The tech-heavy NASDAQ jumps on signs of easing inflation. Well, the NASDAQ led gains among Wall Street's main indices on Wednesday as a slightly lower than expected increase in inflation last month indicated that the Federal Reserve's rapid interest rate hikes were yielding results. The U.S. Treasury yields fell while the NASDAQ jumped as much as 1.15% to its highest intraday level in more than 8 months, with large cap technology stocks, including Apple Inc., Microsoft Corp., and about 0.5% each, and the Labor Department's Consumer Price Index, the CPI, rose 4.9% in April from a year earlier and compared with expectations of a 5% increase. The month-over-month CPI in April rose 0.4% after gaining 0.1% in March. Well, Fed funds futures traders are now pricing in an 86% chance that the Fed will leave rates unchanged in its June meeting and 14% odds of another 25 basis points hike that's issued by FedWatch. Well, today's report suggests that the Fed's campaign to quell inflation is working, albeit more slowly than they would like, said Quincy Crosby, a chief global strategist at LPL Financial in Charlotte, North Carolina. Well, this report, quote, this report will be followed by another one before the Fed meets in June, where expectations are that rent-related inflation will indicate definitive signs of easing, helping to push overall headline inflation lower. Well, the rate-sensitive Standard & Poor's 500 technology sector rose 0.8%, while communication services rose 0.9%. At 9:48 this morning, it's about almost 50 minutes ago, Eastern Time, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 67.8 points, or 0.2%. At 33,494.01, Standard & Poor's 500 was up 11.08 points, or 0.27%, and at 4,130.25, and the NASDAQ Composite was up 95.73 points, or 0.79% at 12,275.29. Well, Alphabet gained 1.6% as the Google parent was set to unveil more artificial intelligence in its products to answer the latest competition from Microsoft. Oil and gas producer Occidental Petroleum fell 2.1% after its first quarter earnings fell short of analyst estimates. Livent, L-I-V-E-N-T Corp., added 4.2% after the Australian lithium miner Alchem agreed to merge with the U.S.-based chemical manufacturing firm to create a $10.6 billion firm. Airbnb lost 11.5% as a vacation rental booking company saw fewer bookings and lower average daily rates in the second quarter. Rivian Automotive jumped 13% after the electric vehicle maker beat first quarter results estimates and reiterated its annual production forecast. Advancing Issues outnumbered decliners by 2.28-1 ratio on the New York Stock Exchange and by a 2.15-1 ratio on the NASDAQ. The Standard & Poor's index recorded 12 new 52 highs and 4 new lows, while the NASDAQ recorded 50 new highs and 37 new lows. Okay, so let's look at what else is happening in the financial markets, the U.S. debt ceiling standoff, clawbacks, and energy permits. Out of Washington, we hear that talks on raising the U.S. federal government's $31.4 trillion debt ceiling enter a new phase on Wednesday after Democratic President Joe Biden and top congressional Republican Kevin McCarthy's first negotiating meeting in 3 months. Time is tight to avoid a historic and economically destabilizing default, which the Treasury Department has warned could come as soon as June 1, so not far off, but some areas of potential compromise emerged after Tuesday's White House meeting. Biden signaled an openness to Republicans' demand to claw back some unused money for COVID relief, which is less than $80 billion. House of Representatives Speaker McCarthy told reporters that Biden also indicated a willingness to work on speeding up permitting for energy projects, a goal that went unmet in 2022. The White House has previously supported that idea. Aides for Biden, McCarthy, top Democratic Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, top Senate Republican Mitch McConnell, and top House Democrat Hakeem Jeffries were to begin meeting daily with another meeting planned on Friday. Both sides had said, quote, default is not an option, end quote, Biden told reporters after Tuesday's meeting, quote, I told congressional leaders I'm prepared to begin a separate discussion about my budget, end quote. Well, Biden and opposition Republicans have been locked in a standoff for months over the debt ceiling, with Democrats calling for a clean, quote-unquote, increase without conditions to pay debts resulting from spending and tax cuts approved by Congress. House and Senate Republicans, meanwhile, have said they will not authorize any additional borrowing without an agreement to cut spending. McCarthy estimated that the two sides had as little as 2 weeks to reach a deal that could then be passed by Congress. Quote, I would hope he would be willing to negotiate for the next 2 weeks so that we can solve this problem, McCarthy said. Well, adding to the urgency, Biden is scheduled to leave on May 18 to attend an annual meeting of the leaders of the group of seven major industrialized nations, though he said he would cancel the trip if needed to avoid default. Quote, if somehow we got down to the wire and we still hadn't resolved this, I would not go. I would stay until this gets finished, Biden said. But even if there is significant progress, the House and Senate have their own, often time-consuming procedures for advancing legislation that opponents of any deal could use to slow things down. So few countries in the world have debt ceiling laws, and Washington's periodic lifting of the borrowing limit merely allows it to pay for spending Congress has already authorized. The Wall Street executives who have advised the U.S. Treasury's debt operations for the last 25 years warned on Tuesday that they were deeply concerned, quote-unquote, about the debt limit impasse, which has markets worried about a U.S. default on payment obligations. Last time the nation got this close to default was back in 2011, also with a Democratic president and Senate with a Republican-led House. So very, very frightening to say the least. Now let's look at what happens with the embattled U.S. Representative George Santos, who's been arrested on fraud, money laundering charges as well. Well, in New York, we hear that U.S. Representative George Santos was arrested today on federal charges of fraud, money laundering, and theft of public funds in the latest hit to the newly elected Republican who has resisted calls to resign for lying about his resume. The 13-count indictment unsealed today charges Santos, who's 34, with defrauding prospective political supporters by laundering funds to pay for his personal expenses and illegally receiving unemployment benefits while he was employed. He is also accused of making false statements to the House of Representatives about his assets, income, and liabilities. Quote, taken together, The allegations in the indictment charged Santos with relying on repeated dishonesty and deception to ascend to the halls of Congress and to enrich himself. Breon Peace, the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District Court of New York, said in a statement, quote, he used political contributions to line his pockets, unlawfully applied for unemployment benefits that should have gone to New Yorkers who had lost their jobs due to the pandemic, and lied to the House of Representatives, Peace had said. Well, Santos's congressional office referred requests for comment to his counsel. An attorney for Santos did not immediately respond to requests for comment about the indictment. Well, top House Republicans who control the chamber by a narrow 222 to 213 margin have so far said they would withhold judgment on Santos. Speaker Kevin McCarthy told reporters on Wednesday, quote, in America, you're innocent until proven guilty, end quote. Shortly after Santos's election in 2022 to represent a wealthy area of New York's Long Island, the New York Times and other media outlets revealed that he had fabricated almost every aspect of his personal and professional history. Among other claims, Santos said he had degrees from New York University and Baruch College, despite neither institution having any record of his attending. He claimed to have worked at Goldman Sachs and Citigroup, which also was untrue. He said falsely that he was Jewish and that his grandparents escaped the Nazis during World War II. Santos, who identifies as gay, also failed to disclose that he was married to a woman for several years, ending in 2019. He has since admitted to fabricating large parts of his resume. Unbelievable. Literally unbelievable, the sort of stuff that people do nowadays. What are you going to do? Bear with me a second here. Now let's look at some other issues. The U.S. credit crunch didn't start with the SVB collapse and may not end there. That's the Silicon Valley Bank. Well, out of Washington, we hear it wasn't the March 10th collapse of Silicon Valley Bank that prompted Carissa Rodaheva, the head of the community bank tucked in the mountains of Western Maryland, to rethink strategy. That process started last year when Federal Reserve interest rate hikes and a less certain economic environment caused Rodaheva, the CEO of the $1.9 billion First United Trust Bank and Trust, in Oakland, Maryland, to shift focus from commercial real estate lending, begin husbanding deposits, quote unquote, with a tougher look at the collateral backing loans, and end up with only a slight $9.6 million increase in lending over the first 3 months of 2023. Quote, when you get into higher interest rates, you look to your collateral, end quote, Rodaheva said in an interview. Quote, we are tightening on price and profitability. That is going to slow lending a bit, end quote. In assessing the impact of the aggressive rate hikes that have lifted the Fed's benchmark overnight interest rate a full 5 percentage points over 14 months, the U.S. central bank officials may take some solace from First United's experience that the worst sort of credit shock has been avoided despite the dramatic collapse 2 months ago of SVB, SVB and Signature Bank, and the more recent failure of First Republic Bank. The First United did see deposits leave early in the first quarter of this year as some account holders spent down balances and others sought higher interest rates, but padded its cash with brokered deposits and strategic quote-unquote borrowing from the Federal Home Loan Bank system, according to the company's results for the quarter. Yet if lending increased only slightly, increase it did for Fed officials, that could spell the difference between concerns about an economy wrecking credit crunch and the source of restraint policymakers would not only expect as they raise rates, but need to take root for inflation to slow. were part of the transmission. A Fed report on financial stability in the central bank survey of the bank loan officers this week reinforced that the banking system wasn't on the brink of a broad crisis, but was making credit less available and more expensive, a process that should mean less consumer and business spending and eventually lower inflation. Well, data showing that banks have started to raise lending standards is typical of where we are in the economic cycle, the Fed Governor Philip Jefferson said today. Well, the economy, oh, that was actually yesterday, the economy has started to slow in an orderly fashion in response to higher interest rates, Jefferson said, calling tighter credit conditions, quote, part of the transmission mechanism of the monetary policy, end quote. Well, after the Fed raised its policy rate to the 5% to 5.25% range at the meeting last week, debate shifted to whether policymakers would find that level adequate to control inflation, allowing them to pause the tightening cycle, or whether further increases might prove necessary. So one focus is whether the banking sector, rattled by the failures of the three regional lenders and facing the fastest rate increases since the 1980s, would crack down so hard on lending that the economy spun into a recession. So according to the minutes of the Fed's March 21-22 meeting, central bank staff at least saw, quote, the potential economic effects of the recent banking sector developments, end quote, as sufficient to shift the outlook from, quote, subdued growth, end quote, to a, quote, mild recession, end quote, later this year. The Fed Chair Jerome Powell said that staff forecast was reiterated at last week's meeting. Well, Powell, however, said he felt the impact of the credit shock remains uncertain, and his own baseline outlook does not include a recession. Well, recent data and survey responses have also pointed away from the harshest outcomes. Bank lending dipped from 1.7% in the 2 weeks following SVB's collapse, but has risen since then and recouped from a third of the decline. Well, the Fed's Senior Loan Officer Opinion Survey, which was conducted after the collapse of SVB and released on Monday, was less dire than the anticipated. Quote, only a slightly larger share of banks tightened standards for key business loans compared with a survey in January. The Fed's semi-annual financial stability report, also released on Monday, saw scant evidence of a broad crisis developing. Now, investors responded by boosting bets that the Fed will end up raising rates at its next meeting in June, though they continue to give more than an 80% probability that will hold rates at the current level. Analysts say that the loan officer survey may be less important for what it says about the current state of credit after the SVB collapse than for what it shows may unfold in response to a weakening economy and dynamic that seems to be affecting loan demand as well as the potential supply. In response to special questions tailored by the current climate, loan officers saw continued credit tightening throughout this year, particularly for commercial real estate loans, and declining demand for a broad swath of lending. The most recent sentiment survey from the National Federation of Independent Business buttressed that view, with a share of firms planning capital outlays in the next 3 to 6 months, dipping to what NFIB characterized as a historically weak 19% in April. The overall index fell to more than a 10-year low. Well, the Fed Loan Officers Survey showed a general wariness about the economy, with respondents saying their plans to tighten credit revolved around risk aversion and concerned about the value of collateral more than from problems with their own capital or liquidity positions, the sort of issues that might flag broader financial stress. Quote, there is a threat of recession, and obviously we see that, we are planning for it, said Greg Hayes, the president and chief operating officer of Kish Bank in central Pennsylvania. quote, the question is, will the Fed back off at the right time or overshoot, end quote. Ramon Luby, the president and CEO of the Maryland Bankers Association, said that the Fed rate hikes have posed challenges with some of the drop in loan demand, he suspects, because higher borrowing costs, quote, might be pricing folks out and having them wait on projects, end quote. But banks are still making deals, Luby had said. The Fed and Chair Powell have made it tremendously clear that the goal is to tame inflation, and they will do it by tightening financial conditions. How the industry responds, folks are going to be paying much more attention to liquidity and then maybe judicious. So we'll have to see, and then being judicious. So we'll have to see where all that goes. He's definitely going to be telling us something or another. Now, bear with me a moment as I want to move on to some other things that we might find important here. One second. Bear with me a moment here. Okay, one second. And let's look at some other things which are really quite important. It seems that Turkey, Syria, Russia, and Iran are in the highest level of talks since the Syrian war. Out of Ankara, we hear that foreign ministers from Turkey, Syria, Russia, and Iran met today in Moscow, marking the highest level talk so far on rebuilding ties between Ankara and Damascus after years of animosity during Syria's civil war. The Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu said in a tweet that he had stressed the need for cooperation in the fight against terrorism and working together to establish the basis for the return of Syrians during the meeting. Well, NATO member Turkey has backed political and armed opposition to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad during the 12-year civil war and sent its own troops into the country's north. It is also hosting more than 3.5 million refugees from its neighbor. Cavusoglu said, quote, taking the political process in Syria forward and protection of Syria's territorial integrity, quote, end quote, were the other issues discussed. Syria's foreign minister, Faisal Mekdad, was quoted as saying, by Syrian state news agency Sana that, quote, despite all the negatives of the past years, there is an opportunity, end quote, for Damascus and Ankara to work together. But the priority for Syria was ending the illegal presence of all foreign militaries, including Turkey's, Mekdad had said. Syria's northwest includes a sliver of territory held by rival militias, including hardline armed four groups and jihadist factions backed by Turkey. Quote, without progress in this matter, we will remain stagnant and will not reach any real results, end quote. Mekdad was quoted as saying. Well, Russia's foreign ministry said in a statement there had been a positive, quote, unquote, positive and constructive atmosphere, end quote, and that the country's deputy foreign ministers would be tasked with preparing a roadmap to advance Syria-Turkey ties. Well, Syrian and Turkish defense ministers had also held talks in Moscow in December. Moscow is Assad's main ally after Russia has encouraged a reconciliation with Turkey. Assad was invited on Wednesday to attend the Arab League summit in Saudi Arabia on May 19, in a major sign that the regional isolation of Damascus has thawed. So that's one of the things that's going on there. One second. Now let's look at some other issues. Bear with me a moment here. One second. All right, let me just see if we can find our notes here. Bear with me. In about 11 minutes or so, we should be speaking to Anthony Moranti. So that'll be very exciting. And he's a candidate for mayor of the city of Yonkers. So that could be really, really fascinating. One second here. Okay. Well, this is very interesting. A cluster of Chinese vessels were spotted near a Russian rig off of Vietnam, so say ship monitors. It seems that a Chinese research vessel flanked by Coast Guard and nearly a dozen boats on Wednesday entered a gas block operated by Russian and Vietnamese state firms, two monitoring groups had said, another potential flashpoint in the South China Seas. It follows a pattern of assertive moves of late by Beijing and its neighbors' exclusive economic zones as it presses its claim to sovereignty over almost the entire South China Sea, testing the United States and its allies at a time of heightened regional tensions. Strong relations between Russia and China are a major factor supporting global stability. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said in March that the two countries have conflicting interests in the South China Sea. Well, the Chinese research ship, two Coast Guard, and 11 fishing boats entered Block 04-03 of Vietsovpetro, a venture between Russia's Zaporizhzhia and Petro-Vietnam, and were still in the area by nightfall. Data from two independent vessel monitors reviewed by Reuters had shown. Well, the Chinese group also was close to Blocks 05-1B and 05-1C, operated by Idemitsu Oil and Gas, a unit of Japan's Idemitsu Kosan, the data had shown. China has been accused of using its Coast Guard and an armada of fishing boats, widely considered militia, to intimidate and disrupt energy activities, including off Malaysia, Indonesia, the Philippines, and Vietnam. Beijing says it is lawfully operating in its waters. But the move on Wednesday was extraordinary, quote unquote, according to Ray Powell, who leads Stanford University's Project Miyushu on the South China Sea because of, quote, the sheer number of militia and Coast Guard ships involved, end quote. Quote, it seems they are sending a message about China's jurisdiction over Vietnam's oil and gas operations, end quote, Powell said, adding at least three Vietnamese fisheries surveillance vessels had moved close to the Chinese ships. Well, China's jurisdiction. It seems that China's foreign ministry said those activities were, quote, normal, end quote. Quote, Chinese fishing and scientific research vessels carry out normal production and work activities in maritime areas under China's jurisdiction, it said. It made similar remarks on Tuesday after Chinese boats approached an area where the navies of India and Southeast Asian countries held exercises. Well, Japan's Idemitsu declined to comment. Vietnam's foreign ministry and other companies involved did not immediately respond to requests for comment. On Wednesday, the Chinese vessels were about 10 nautical miles from the Japanese operating rig, about 20 miles from the Russian-Vietnam rig, according to South China Sea Chronicle Initiative, an independent nonprofit. Well, the Chinese research vessel moved at full speed before entering Vietnam's EEZ, economic zone, but slowed to 4 to 5 knots, suggesting the ship was conducting a survey there. So surveys in a country's economic zone without prior notification have in previous instances been considered hostile or provocative. It follows similar incidents in March in two blocks involving Russian firms off Vietnam, which has licensed operations of more than 150 blocks. So we'll just have to see where all this, very tense to say the least. A let's look at what's happening in Pakistan. So what is the corruption case against Imran Khan? Out of Islamabad, we hear that Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan was arrested on Tuesday by an anti-graft agency on corruption charges. Government officials alleged that Khan and his wife received land worth millions of dollars as a bribe from a real estate tycoon through a charitable trust. Khan and his aides have denied any wrongdoing. The developer has denied the charges in the past, but he could not be contacted on Wednesday, and his company's marketing manager did not respond to a request for a fresh comment. So what is Al-Qadir Trust? Al-Qadir Trust is a non-governmental welfare organization set up by Bushra Watto, Khan's third wife, and Khan in 2018 when he was still in office. So while Prime Minister, Khan promoted the trust at official events. The couple are the sole trustees, according to Law Minister Azam Nazir Tarar. So what does the trust do? The trust runs a university outside Islamabad devoted to spirituality and Islamic teachings, a project inspired by the former First Lady, who is also commonly known as Bushra Bibi and has a reputation as a spiritual healer. Khan has publicly described her as his spiritual leader and said she helped guide him towards a spiritual path. So what is the corruption chart? What is the corruption case? Interior Minister Rana Sanaullah told a press conference on Tuesday that the trust was a front for Khan to receive valuable land as a bribe from a real estate developer, Malik Riaz Hussain, who is one of Pakistan's richest and most powerful businessmen. The anti-graft agency that arrested Khan had summoned Hussain late last year, to submit answers on the land donated to the trust. The trust has nearly 60 acres of land worth 7 billion Pakistani rupees. It's about $24.7 million. And another large piece of land in Islamabad close to Khan's hilltop home, the minister said. So the 60-acre parcel in Punjab State's Jhelum district is the official site of the university, but very little has been built there. So we'll see how this all comes about. The government said that the scheme originated with £190 million repatriated to Pakistan in 2019 by Britain after Hussein forfeited cash and assets to settle a British probe into whether they were proceeds of crime. So instead of putting it in Pakistan's treasury, Khan's government used the money to pay fines levied by a court against Hussein for illegal acquisition of government lands at below market value for development in Karachi. So the interior minister alleged Hussein gave the land in Jhelum and Islamabad to Al-Qadir Trust in exchange for that favor. So that is the story. So let me move on to something else here. One second. Let me just see if I can get this done right before we get, I think this will work, at least I hope so. Bear with me a moment. No, let me see where it is. 1 second. Okay, let's see if this works. I think it will. Okay, I want to just prepare. In about a minute, we're going to be hearing from our next guest. Bear with me a moment as I look this up here. One moment here, I've got to find this. Okay, 1 second. All right, 1 minute. Okay, let me see if I can get this. One moment, I have to think this through. Okay, I think I've got this. I just forgotten exactly what I was looking for here. Yes. All right, we're going to be speaking to Anthony Maranti very, very shortly. He will be calling. Anthony Maranti is a candidate for the city of Yonkers mayoral position. So he's running for mayor. And it's very interesting because he ended up sending notice that X2O, which is a $1 million investment that was made by Peter Kelly and was on the waterfront, was like the first large high-end restaurant that began the emergence of the importance of the waterfront. And it was really fascinating, but unfortunately, in an interview that Kelly had with Rohud, it turns out that he ended up advising that the X2O had closed. And this speaks to, as far as Mr. Maranti is concerned, to Mayor Spano's failed economic development priorities. So it's going to be very, very compelling to find out what is going on there or what the issues are. Okay, so bear with me a moment because I'm going to try to see if I can locate. Oh, here he's calling now. Bear with me a moment. Good morning, Mr. Maranti. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay, well, I'm so glad that you've made the time for the broadcast, and it's good to be able to speak to you about your effort. You're engaged in a campaign to become the next mayor of the city of Yonkers, which is like huge. And what caused you to consider that move? Because you're a big businessman, and you're involved in so many different facets of life and engagement in the community. What brought you to that, you know, that focus?
Well, good morning, Hezzy, and to all your listeners. Thank you for the opportunity. Well, I felt that considering what's happening throughout the city, I mean, you know, a lot of the pomp and circumstance is beautiful, but what I see happening here is that we need some Republican leadership to come in here and take control. I mean, the crime situation is not being reflected properly because of the fact that crimes are not being reported anymore. Police are not making arrests. So the numbers are skewed, and a lot of but people know, and you can tell that by people not going shopping anymore. They don't want to go into the stores anymore, and you know, and the stores themselves are not, you know, stocking up like they used to because the snatch and grabs are getting more frequent. So why should I fill up my shelves so that someone could steal all this stuff? And yeah. There's, you know, obviously, you know, the mayor is a Democrat and he can't put as much more pressure. I mean, we need more Republicans throughout the state to put pressure on the Democrats because they're going to run, run rampant with all this stuff. I mean, we were fortunate recently just to stop the governor with this housing compact that she was, this disaster that she was about to put into place. I mean, people are moving out in droves as it is. And listen, I like Yonkers. I love Yonkers. I mean, I'm here. My wife and I are here 35 years now, going on 36. Mm. And we want to stay. I mean, I'd like to stay here. But my constituents, I just heard the other day another good constituent said she had it because she has to make, they have to make so many calls to the police because some of the newer neighbors are a little bit more aggressive than others, and the older, you know, it's a whole lot of stuff happening. And I'm just like, I had it. And I just don't think that the mayor has the, you know, he's what his focus is, because you know, development is beautiful, but it's driven up all the rent costs, and now look what's happened. Now we have a housing crisis. You know, it's you know, all this development has done nothing but raise the rents. So it's a multitude of things, Hezzy, that I can go on and on and on. But I think crime is the ultimate thing, because it definitely is the instigator that eventually will unfortunately get involved with finances, and that is my other major concern is that I don't want to be taxed to death because the state keeps all of our money. Does that have enough retreat? Is that enough?
I think it is. Well, you got all the time in the world, except it's not going to be 2 hours. It's a maximum of an hour because then they shut us off from the radio after 2 hours.
Well, I actually got to go at 11. I have to go to 11:30. I have to go to a meeting at 11:30, so we'll have to cut it short. 11:30, 11:35.
Okay.
That's okay with you.
It's no problem. Whatever time you have, that will be wonderful. One thing that was really I was in shock about because I had not known about it. To be honest with you, we were under assault. There was an attempt to shut us down the last few days as a website, but evidently they failed, and my webmaster was able to commandeer this thing, and we have it under control. So one of the things, though,
wow,
that I did read was got a notice from your office, because you're running the campaign for mayor, was that you pointed out that X2O, the restaurant, which was built on the waterfront and was probably the beginning of the development of the waterfront, and yet they closed. I had not known about that, and I think that's the most frightening thing I've seen, and it shows the demise somehow of the city of Yonkers, because that gave the city a great deal of panache. The food was excellent. The view was exceptional on the waterfront, literally, and you could see the glory of New Jersey from Yonkers. It was stupendous. So what happened there? And what would be the cause of that?
Well, you know, I picked up on that from a News 12 report, and also there was a LoHUD article on it. You know, I didn't actually do any investigating on the whole situation. My campaign got a call yesterday saying, oh, no, it's going to open up on Wednesday like normal. But I had someone call the state tax department, and they said, no, that place – well, so we changed it from closed to seized because apparently – something's going on in the background that they may open tomorrow. Well, today's Wednesday, so if they opened it today, that their regular hours, you know, what days were Wednesday to Sunday, and we were told that they are going to open. I said, but the tax department said that they took over, and why would News 12 and LoHUD report that? So we kind of jumped without without verifying. So we're going to find out what happens if they're open today. But the point here is that either which way, we know that X2O has a big tax bill that they haven't been able to pay, and what's the bottom line of the whole situation is that there's not enough business. You know, if you have enough business, then, you know, and that means, and the state doesn't close you down just like that. They give you numerous opportunities to survive.
Well, I do remember, and this has been going on for many, many years, to validate what you're saying. It's a lot of people refuse to go there to the waterfront, even though there were quite a few restaurants that had opened up there, and was good cuisine, good food, good service, any way you look at it. The only problem is that a lot of people were afraid to go there because they didn't feel safe, and a lot of people wouldn't be wearing their jewelry because they didn't feel safe. And there wasn't enough of a police force that was down there. I remember years ago, before even X2O was built, we had a bicycle police force that was down there. And they were stupendous. I couldn't believe it. But that was even before they had electrical bicycles, where it's like, you could just put in, I guess a lithium battery or whatever, and they would be able to go. But these guys did it all by, foot power. It was unbelievable. And that place was kept clean as a whistle. It was fantastic. And then they dissolved that whole squadron, and it never got better again. And I don't understand the point of it all.
Well, this is just something that just came up about the other day, and we jumped on it because we said this is exactly what you're saying. I mean, you hit the nail on the head 300 times. If people are not going down there, eventually this is what's going to happen. And it's what's happening with this bail reform thing, although she says she's changed this from bail reform so that the aggressive criminals, the judges can have more discretion in putting them in jail. Mm-hmm. So as long as you don't hit anybody, you can steal everything you want. So again, it's going to affect not just there, which is in that very tough area they're going through, but it's going to be all over the city pretty soon. It's going to be all over the city. It already is all over the city. It's a matter of just controlling it. It has to be controlled, and I don't know if I have all the answers, but I want to tell you something. I'm going to be, you know, my first day in office is going to be a meeting with the police department to see what else we need to do to stop this bleeding so that people can feel safe and want to, you know, go shopping and then go into the economics, and then hopefully people won't move. I'm just, you know, I got my attention was caught a couple of years ago when we did the budget, and we found out that our transfer tax was double what it was supposed to be, and that means that all these people are leaving town. And that's very scary. I mean, I not that we have not good people moving in, but the people that are buying the homes are a lot of them are making them just investments, and Yonkers is becoming one big apartment building, and I'm not happy about that. We can't be one big apartment building with absentee ownership. You know what happens in absentee ownership in rental units? It's just, you know, exactly. It should be, you know, chaos waiting to happen.
Absolutely.
Why did I do this? Do I have to do this, Hezzy? Listen, you know,
need to do it.
25, 30 years, you know, I'm a CPA. I'm a businessman. I own the kitchen store. I have a dog grooming store. I'm a community guy. I'm the people's councilman right now. You know, I'm independent. Mm-hmm. I don't count on anything from government to keep me alive. Okay. So I'm here for the people. I'm here for the people. Okay. I'm not here for the developers. I'm here for the people. And you know, and people want to stay here in Yonkers, and I'm doing everything I can. And I was talking to somebody this morning at the gym about the same thing, is that you know they're concerned. You know, they're concerned. And I said, well, I have a plan. I just gotta get the right people in place to help me implement what I want to do to restore confidence in Yonkers. But unfortunately, it's also, think of it as a funnel, Hezzy, and we're at the bottom of the funnel where it comes together, and going up to the top is the state, the federal government. I mean, if we don't, and I'm saying Republicans have to do this, because the Democrats, they're all playing that same tune. They're afraid to go against that grain without getting ridiculed. You know, they all got to be in that same woke, crazy thing. You know, I mean, you know, you want to help people. You want to take care of the climate. I understand that. I'm all for taking care of the environment. But you know, these things are getting too radical without common sense. You know, it's all kinds of, you know, aggressive. I don't think aggressive is the word. Policies and they're, you know, they're losing track of the little people, what the little people need, you know, common folks, what they need to survive, you know, between the gas prices, utilities, groceries.
Yeah.
It's crazy out there what's been going on, and I think it's all done because of failed Democratic policies.
Well, you know, I got to ask you about that. I think it's a valid point you're making. We've certainly had a lopsided, engagement of people on the Democratic side who've been elected into office, and we've had a waning Republican effort, or outcome rather than an effort, but an outcome of Republicans that are represented in government. How do we switch that? And do people realize it, or are people so politicized that they're now either Democrat or Republican, and very few independents? And so how do we engage more people to deal with the issues rather than the politics of it all? So, well, you know, is a Democratic issue or a Republican issue? Or is it just an issue of life?
Well, crime knows no party.
Correct.
So the problem we have, Hezzy, is the takeover of the mainstream media by these liberal folks who identify and report what they want to report. You know, so people are afraid. People don't want to be ridiculed. Yeah, you know, I'm not afraid of anybody. You know, I said I'm going to say what's on my mind. I mean, you know, the policies. You know, I believe in the policy making situation that people are they're afraid that they don't want people don't want to be criticized, so they stay in a cocoon. Well, you know what? I'm hoping I'm the seed that plants, you know, that just starts the whole thing over here in Yonkers, at least. I mean, to take over some more, because if you without having one party rule is bad. You know, it's communism. It's going to be, you know, and socialism, and they get to do what they want with no pushback. You know, fortunately, again, like I said, with that housing compact, the Democratic leadership got pushback from their constituents because, you know, the common sense Democrats also said, "Hey, this is not good," and we were able to hold on to it. So don't think it's dead; it's just asleep right now. They're waiting the right opportunity. You know, she's, you know, her or any particular Democrat. But it's all because there's not enough Republicans oversight. And how do I do it, Hezzy? You got to start from one place. I can only start as mayor of the city of Yonkers, and I think that this is if that's what it's going to take to spark something here in Westchester. So be it. You know, I'm trying, I'm not going down without a fight. Okay, I'm giving it its best shot, and I'm the best qualified person to do that at this particular time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly won't deny your credibility. You've been very credible. You've always been on target. You've always been level headed. You've always looked at the numbers. You're a numbers guy. You know how to read a consensus of what our budget should be. There were times I remember when you were reviewing the budget that was offered by the mayor's office, and you found errors in creating the financial mechanism.
Right.
There are a lot of you saved, I think, over $1 million. You found that was erroneously input.
It was a duplication.
But you know what? You know what the problem is, that quite often we have sloppy work, or it's intentional, and I really wonder how, when you have a financial officer who should be reviewing it, and then we had an oversight body that was also supposed to review what our Department of Finance came up with, and they do audits for every community in Westchester County, and they missed it, but you got it. It was huge.
Well, you know, occupational hazard. I mean, obviously, you know, I can see things that people can't see, you know, because I just look at numbers all the time. And that's you know, I mean, you know, I don't want to say that it was intentional. I think it was an oversight. I mean, it was in the capital budget, I believe it was. It was a couple of years ago that particular issue happened, it was harm, no harm, no foul. I mean, I think that, you know, they were embarrassed about the fact that they missed it. But needless to say, if it's blatant as that, if it were $20,000, I may not have caught it. But it was a $500,000, if I remember correctly. That was an item that was in two different years and two different spots, and we brought up and said, "Oh, you're right," and they agreed that I was correct. But again, so look, what's going on? Because again of the one party rule, and here in Yonkers with the real crux of the problem here in Yonkers now, and again, it's nothing personal. Listen, everybody's friends with Mike Spanner. Everybody, he's a nice, you know, jovial guy. He's very approachable to anybody. No one's going to deny who the person he is. Okay, but nobody should be in power more than 12 years. Okay, nobody, because what happens is complacency sets in, and you need to bring new people in to get new perspectives, because now it becomes untouchable, and I'm trying to bring the key to unlock everything here so that people feel free. I mean, Hezzy, we're people are afraid to sign petitions, because when you're in power so long, people are afraid of retaliation. How crazy is that in Yonkers, New York, in 2023? that people are afraid to show that, you know, that they I can't. What one woman wouldn't sign my petition, my Republican petition, she says I have a conflict of interest. You know, a lot of Republican people have their kids on that works for the city, and they're afraid of retaliation, and that's shameful, absolutely shameful. So if anything that's going to come out of this phone conversation, you know, we have a petition out there, Hezzy, to restore term limits. It's being circulated by both Democrats and Republicans, and we're working together on this, and we got to get this stuff in the next 3 weeks. So, you know, hopefully, we're going to, you know, people who's listening here, what you want to contact, my campaign. We have a website up too called restoretermlimits.com. And they can go there and you know, they could just go on there and get the email and send us an email, and they want to sign the petition. So we need to take back this city, and because if four council members and the mayor could do anything in this city, and right now there's a coalition of both Democrats and Republicans that are working closely with the mayor that is creating a very unhealthy situation for the city of Yonkers.
And how do you define that? How is it creating a diminution in the quality of life in Yonkers?
Well, because
this entourage of people in government.
Well, again, because if you have certain people, only certain people, given power, because that's what's basically happened is that it's limited to four people. Okay, because obviously myself, Corazon, and Sinead voted no on the term limit extension. I'm kind of the odd man out in the sense that because, Sinead and Corazon, even though Corazon's running the primary against the mayor, they're still Democrats, so they'll get a little bit more leeway because of the fact that, they work with all the other Democrats, on the various factions of the Democratic side. So whereas the Republican side is somewhat compromised by the relationship with the Spanos, and the party.
That's a very valid point. But my question is, why is it that there's such fear? Is there anybody that's actually watching and seeing how people vote? I thought that was still sacrosanct, and nobody was able to know how you voted. If I go to the voting booth, how does anyone know how I voted one way or the other?
Well, they don't. They know who voted. They don't know how they voted.
Yeah, exactly. They know who voted, but they don't know how they voted. So
why
are we in fear?
But, Patty, I was talking about the petition process. Petitions where you have to put your name. Your readers know, your listeners know, that in order to get on the ballot, you have to get a certain amount of valid petitions. I was able to get 2,300. I needed 950. I got 2,300, and survived. And I was fortunate. I was not faced with a primary. So I'm sitting back eating popcorn, waiting to find out who my opponent's going to be in November. But I'm also trying to create, another line too called Restore Term Limits on top of the referendum to restore the term limits. Term limits. Is going to be on the tip of everybody's tongue over the next just less than 6 months. Okay, because unfortunately, people are not educated enough at this point. They're living their life and they're not realizing what has happened. They're so used to Spano's the mayor. Okay, Spano's the mayor. Bree's the councilman in the fifth district. He's been there. He hasn't done anything to create any issues. But the point here is that 12 is enough. Either enough is enough or 12 is enough. I'm trying to figure out which term is going to resonate the best, but that's what and people know. People are not stupid. Yonkers residents are not stupid. They just busy with life. They're busy with life.
Well, how do we change the dynamic? Maybe under your guidance, if you become the mayor, you could change the dynamic because, like, for example, the cops are not telling us what the crime rate is. They're not arresting a lot of people. They're letting a lot of stuff go on. There are people who are writhing in their own filth at Getty Square. Makes it very, very difficult to even traverse that whole area. Feels very unsafe. and yet that's part of that whole area that was under development, and it's all falling apart. And people may not talk about it, but
fault.
It's there.
It's not the cops' fault. It's not the cops' fault. I mean, they doesn't. You know, we have.
No,
I would say that we Yonkers probably has the best police and fire department in the country. Okay, all the leadership in the fire department has always been good. They've been on top of it all. But the police, the police get ridiculed. Okay, I talk to the cops that I know, and they go before a judge and they says you brought this guy in because he did this. Your Honor, yeah, he did that. Well, what are you wasting my time with that? So he punched some guy in the nose. I'm sorry, Your Honor, that's assault. But everything's – so the cops basically are saying to themselves, why should they bother? They have to just mitigate the circumstance, be the social worker, and move on and hope that
– So under your aegis – should you become the mayor, how do you change that dynamic? How do you change it so that people know what they can do and what they cannot do and how the courts respond? And how do you tell people the truth?
I don't know, but I'm going to become very good friends with Mimi Rocha. I mean, because obviously it's all about the DA. It's all about the DA.
She's not doing her job. She's not doing her job.
But again, it's all about the one party rule, and if we get some more Republicans throughout Westchester County, I'm hoping that's if I'm going to be the catalyst to let people know, especially if I as a Republican win the mayoralty here in the city of Yonkers, which is 45+% Democratic. Actually, I have the things right in front of me right now. I'm creating some because we're about to do some robocalls to wake people up about the term limits. 45%, and then it's only like 25% Republican and 30% non-affiliate. I'm looking at it right here. I have the whole active list of the Yonkers as I'm talking to you right in front of me. Excuse me?
Really? 35% non-affiliated?
I think there. I didn't put all the numbers down, Hezzy, but I would probably say that it's 20, 25. So roughly 45, 25, 30, and then you have the conservatives and the others, and the working a very small portion of the working family. So this is but the point here is that I've earned the respect of a lot of Democrats. Even my very liberal neighbors and stuff like that I talk to, they says, all Republicans should be like you. I said, listen, God gave me two ears and one mouth for a reason. Listen twice as much as you talk, because listen to what the people say. I don't agree with what the guy was saying to me the other day. I don't want to go into that particular thing, I listen to the Democrats. I understand what they're talking about, but I don't agree with it. But the point here is Democrats don't want to hear the Republicans' side of you. They just don't shut up. They're wrong. I don't want to talk about it. That's their reaction.
That might be their reaction, but the point is there is a platform. You could write articles. You could certainly speak on radio, and I'm sure there are television programs where you could speak about it. Do you not believe, and I'm sure you do, that if you espouse your position and explain it, there will be, of course, people say, oh, well, he's a Republican, so I'm not going to believe anything he says, and I've got the dogma that I've already inculcated into my thinking. But there will be others that will be enlightened by not having heard the Republican perspective. And
well,
don't you think that many people would wake up for that?
Of course, but the opportunities are not there anymore, Hezzy. News 12 isn't what people don't even watch it anymore. Everyone's streaming other stuff. They're streaming all this stuff. They're not even watching the news anymore. They're tired of you. They're tired of it. So way back, when you used to have Mike Edelman and Kenny Jenkins and Point Counterpoint and Jeanine Rose used to have newsmakers. You remember all that stuff?
Right.
And before this, The big problem is this communication thing is people are living their life on social media, the older folks, including myself. I don't manage my own Facebook stuff. My campaign manager, he takes care of all my Facebook stuff. I think that stuff is dangerous. I don't even sign up for apps on stuff because I don't want people following me all over every place I go, you know. But that's what these kids are being taught to do, and they're being, you know, this is what they're taught, and
The problem with social media is it's not news. People giving their opinion, they're pontificating on one thought or another. It's not necessarily balanced. It doesn't inculcate larger society, but it's just very, very narrow-minded. And we need a much more broadened concept, and we need to be able to be challenged by one side of the equation or another politically, and we don't have that. And unfortunately, a lot of media has absconded from their responsibility by becoming also pontificators. They got an opinion. They don't have any rationale, which is really problematic. And they've undermined so many things because of it.
Well, my job is to educate them. And help your viewers to go. I mean, besides the RestoreTermLimits.com to get on that petition and let's get this thing on the ballot in November. They can go to MoranthyForYonkers.com. Help me out. Make a donation because this is going to be very expensive to educate the people. You know,
yes.
I know how to win elections. I know how to win elections. I've had two tough elections to win my council seat and cost me a lot of money.
Yes.
But I had to educate people, and that's what I'm working on right now. And I mean, you know, we've been working on it, and we're going to continue to work on it. No matter who, listen, I'm not running against my spouse. I'm running against whatever Democrat that's there, because whoever's there in front of me, I think my message is going to resonate as long as I get to the right people at the right time to get them to the polling place and play the game, the early voting game, the absentee ballot game that the Democrats have mastered. And I know how to do that. I've done it already. I've done it twice. I've won the paper twice.
Well, look, it's not like I'm only beholden to you. Certainly, we have different parties that are out there, and I give access to everybody on my website. And the bottom line is, if you want it, it's there. It's like I don't curtail redefine what's being sent. And there's nothing wrong with particular dogma or particular perspectives being presented. One of the problems is we don't have that discourse. And there should be discourse in our media, which unfortunately there isn't. And that's problematic. It's very problematic because it undermines our governance. Compelling to recognize that so many people are unaware of the news of what's really going on. That too has become a really major issue. I think a lot of people don't even realize that the city of Yonkers employs over 5,000 people between the city of Yonkers and the Board of Education. And those people are married, and they're married to a spouse, whoever that spouse is, gay, straight, makes no difference. But the point is, we're not a young city anymore, and we're over 50, we're more likely 60 and 70 years of age. So all these people who are employed by the city, they have children, at least one child, at least one, and many have more. So all of a sudden, from 5,000 employed, you got a spouse, brings it up to 10,000 votes, and you got a child that now brings it up to 15,000 votes. The last time the mayor had to run for office, he won by 13,000 votes. That's it. That's the whole thing in a kaboodle.
Well,
those are the numbers.
But
how do we eclipse all of that?
Well, it's again. Mario DiGiorgio was his last opponent.
That was a setup.
I'm sorry, he was really a waste.
He never even bothered.
Things will change when Anthony Maranthi, Republican, wins the race on November 7th. It's going to change some of the dynamics, maybe a lot of the dynamics, because now the media will have to pay attention to Republicans. Okay, you know, right now, you know, you have Biden coming to town today because he's already starting the 24 campaign for himself and for the congressmen, the congresspeople that got taken, you know, that got taken down by, you know, by Lawler and Molinaro, you know, who won.
Right.
So they want those seats back. So, I mean, because we didn't have the red wave that we were having because my Republican colleagues throughout the country didn't properly run their campaigns. They thought they would win on issues. Ha! You don't win on issues anymore. You win at the ballot box. And, an issue helps. But you got to follow through with a strong campaign that takes into account early voting and paper absentee ballots. You got to take advantage of everything, and there's no rest for the weary. You got to win this thing 100% every day from today forward. There's little time off, maybe some sleep. That's about it.
I hate to cut you off. I just realized that it's 11:35 and you said you had a meeting, and I don't want to be the cause of your being late.
Thank you.
So my apology, and I hope you'll consider coming back again, because there's a lot to discuss and a lot to know. And so thank you, and thanks for your time. And give us the website address where people can learn a little bit more about your campaign effort.
You can go to MarantiForYonkers.com, and if you want to sign that petition, let people know. You can go there too, but there's the RestoreTermLimits.com also, so people can sign up and we can get this thing on the ballot.
Excellent. Well, thanks again.
Thank you, Henry. I hope to
speak to you soon. All the best, sir.
I'm sure. He will. I'm sure, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you. Here we are. So apologies to Mr. Maranti, of course, and because I was so engrossed in what he had to say, I wasn't looking at the clock. And then all of a sudden I was looking and I said, oh my God, it was already 11:35. It's now 11:36. So, very interesting. I guess what is compelling is, unfortunately, in the city of Yonkers, we haven't had a strong Republican voice for a very, very long time. And as that may or may not be the cause of a lot of issues, but it might also be the cause of a lot of issues and a lot of concerns. And it would be wonderful, because I think the last time we had an election, the Republican Party was not engaged and not involved. They were almost non-existent, even though there are many people who had a long legacy of accomplishment. They sit in the Republican household, so to speak. They've created their own agenda, but you hardly heard about it. You didn't know about it. And not all of the people who were regarded as Republicans stayed Republicans, and then switched and became Democrats. It was a major upheaval because there was a lack of concern by people in the Republican Party in Yonkers. And maybe with Mr. Maranti, we're going to see a resurgence of interest in looking at the issues and looking at the solutions that have been presented by the Republicans and under Mr. Maranti, and whether he wins the mayoralty or not, the point is there could be an infusion and a resuscitation of some of the concepts that are regarded as Republican. And but I don't know if they'll win based on demographics, because there are more Democrats than there are Republicans. The idea is not to necessarily switch people's party affiliation, but rather to give them a rationale for why a particular concept, whether Republican or Democrat, fits into their lifestyle, into their dream, into what they hope for themselves as well as their children and their neighbors. So these are the issues that make sense to me. I had no idea that there was anybody anywhere in politics that thought that way. I I look for a basis and a rationale for why things are pertinent and why they're not. There are many issues that a Democrat in concept that may or may not work, and there are similar issues and concerns that may or may not work on the Republican side. The idea is to find the issues that do resonate because they're valid, because they speak to the human dynamic that we all have. There may be rationale and reasons why some groups of people, whoever they are, however they define themselves, will gravitate to a particular demeanor, a particular political perspective, whereas others will veer away from it because even though they may be regarded as part of this group or that group, however people are defined, however they define themselves, but they don't necessarily all fit the same whole because they are all different and people are different. And what matters to somebody who regards themselves as a Republican or a Democrat may be different from the other person who regards themselves as a Republican or a Democrat, or a Democrat or as a Republican, or as an independent, or some other party affiliation. All these things come into play, but we haven't had a viable candidate from both sides of the political divide, Republican, Democrat, Democrat, Republican, and we should not forget about the Working Families Party and so many other things as well. So bear with me a moment, because I've got to get that disillusion today of medication. So on Wednesdays and Mondays, so all right. Sorry about that. Let me just see. I had unplugged. I'd forgotten about the time. So let me just see here. I haven't spoken to you for a little bit of time. So sorry about that delay. Let me just see what else is going on. All right, we only have a few minutes left, so we'll catch up with things that may be of value here. One thing that's really quite interesting, I remember, for example, when we had the old police department commissioner, who's now working for the MTA, we used to hear remarks like crime is down, blah 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 blah, but the crime statistics were never proven. There are no papers, there is no monthly report, there isn't even a 6-month report, There is nothing that comes out of the police department to validate the crime rates and the crime statistics here in the city of Yonkers. I don't know how it is in other communities, because it doesn't really matter to me what they're doing in some other community, because we function and focus most of our attention on Yonkers, of course, and other communities that are very close by, like Mount Vernon and Bronxville and places like that, and further up north as well. But the point is, we don't have the statistics to prove anything. So it's just somebody's hearsay, and it means absolutely nothing. Where are the facts? Where are the facts? And what's fascinating about the city in Yonkers is that so many people who are in politics parrot the same bullshit, and that's the best word for it, bullshit, because there's no validation for any of it. I remember once getting a call from somebody who was in politics, and this person says to me that crime had gone down, and I was so offended that I would hear something like that. I called this person back. I said, have you seen any of the statistics? Where are they? What statistics are you quoting? Who told you that these things went down? And the answer is, this person never had any of that information. The person was simply told. How frightening that people would just accept BS as if it was proof. There is no such thing anymore. This is like pontificating bullshit, and that's exactly what it is. For what purpose is beyond me, but because it doesn't suit the reality. We can't live on make-believe. We need to know what's what, because if we know what the facts are, then we can move accordingly. I'm not saying necessarily change the political dynamic. That's up to the public to decide. However, it's important for everyone, whether Republican or Democrat, Democrat or Republican or independent or whatever have you, everyone needs to know exactly what the statistics are, whether it be on economic growth, whether it be on economic investment, whether it be on building, whether it be on new businesses opening up, and so on, in that you look at needs to have statistical advice and information. And if you don't have that, then we're wasting our time, because we're going nowhere and we're not even getting there quickly. We're just going nowhere. It's absolutely outrageous. This is the sort of stuff that continues. And it's not necessarily unique to the city of Yonkers. There are many places that have the same sort of, I don't know, plodding along, make-believe, and the reality is just not there. And a lot of it is dependent not on the mayor specifically, but the mayor can lend a demeanor, a sense of sensibility to what's going on. Where's the proof? And why don't we have the proof? It doesn't matter if what we've said in the past is no longer as proof can be proven to be appropriate or on target. We just need to know where we are today, and we need to move forward to change the equation if we need to, or to celebrate the fact that we're doing such a great job. Everyone has ups and downs, and today it may go up, tomorrow it may go down. That's the way life is. There's nothing that's totally consistent. But what can be consistent are the parameters by which we make judgment calls and base our focus, attention, and money in order to resolve issues and concerns one way or the other. And this is what's pertinent. There's nothing wrong to find out that we've been deficient in one area or another. What is wrong is that we may deceive ourselves by those who espouse numbers are never proven. So forget the past. Let's build on a beginning. Let's start fresh. Let's find out where we are. And when we find out where we are, legitimately where we are, it won't diminish the work of our fire department, won't diminish the work of our police department, it won't diminish anything. But we need to, therefore, to formulate exactly what may be wrong. If we're not doing well in policing, it's not because our staff in policing are deficient. We just may not have a large enough police department. We may need more police for whatever the reasons are, and that will be borne out by none other than statistics, real statistics, not BS. We need statistics in order to know where we are at the present, and we need to define where we need to be into the future. And we may first find out where we are today. We may not have the budget capacity to increase our staff, so we have to define how we're going to do a better job based on the staff that we have. And at the same time, also plan for increasing the size of our police force. And there are a lot of important things that can be done. And the point is, for example, I know that some people in the police department, they want a pay increase. Well, maybe we can't afford to give them a pay increase. So maybe we need to use whatever we expected to use as a pay increase rather than to get more people on staff, because we need more people in the police department. Maybe it's time to resurrect a patrol in the downtown area to make sure, by bicycle. And nowadays you can get electrically powered bicycles so that the cops can take care and watch what's going on. And that's what we need. And we may need that as well in other places too, like in Ridge Hill or in other places or in the downtown areas. Look, the bottom line is this is not rocket science. And it's not like I have all the information, but the bottom line is that all these things need to be brought into focus, and we need to be able to define where we are. And when we know where we are, we will know where we need to go. And then by knowing where we need to go and working toward that end, we may define and redefine exactly where we are, and we may build the expectation that we have of ourselves, and that we will meet the expectations or even exceed the expectations of those that might want to frequent our downtown, our development areas, may decide they want to be involved in getting a place in housing in the city of Yonkers and so on and so forth. It's a time to rebuild, and there is never a time to stop. We just need to constantly build based on a plan. We need to have a plan. We need to adopt a plan. We need to create a plan that will work for the benefit of causing the city to blossom in a much better way. Like, for example, we used to have like a ferry service that would take people from the waterfront, all the way down to Wall Street. I haven't been down there a long time because I'm no longer as able to walk as I used to be, and was unbelievable. I'm literally put together by my doctors. If it wasn't for them, I don't think I'd be walking and talking. So they've kept me afloat by every conceivable medical technology under the sun. It's absolutely amazing. If ever one wants to get sick, this might be the time, because technologically there's so much advancement in medicine and in technology that have gone to keep me alive, which is amazing. Just wasn't available 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago. It's a different time, and it still continues to develop. I mean, did you ever imagine that wherever I am, I'm being tracked by internet? Everybody knows, well, not everybody, but there are telecommunication centers that keep a track of where I am. They don't know. They know exactly where I am 24/7. Exactly where I am. They know what my heartbeat is. They know my blood pressure. They know everything about me. They know if my fibrillator is malfunctioning. They know when my fibrillator acts up in order to compensate for a poor heartbeat. They know the minute I have a heart attack, if I should ever have one. All these things are there, definitely present. And you know, my blood pressure, it's absolutely amazing. And to be honest with you, what's fascinating is when I had to get my fibrillator, this was a few months back, I was reading about it, and they sent me the literature from Columbia Presbyterian, and I was reading about it. There were only supposed to be two wires. Each one went from the upper to the lower chamber of the heart, each one. But it turned out afterwards, I found out that I had three wires, and it was very interesting because that was never written in any of the documentation. The third wire is what keeps me connected to the internet. And they had called me after everything had settled and the wires were in place and they were embedded in the heart. They were able to advise me that if I was okay with it, that they would want to plug me in so that they could watch over me 24/7, which I agreed to. I had no problem with it. First, I wondered, like, well, it could get quite intrusive because they'll know everything about me at every moment. But the point is, it was either a question of a little bit of intrusion or my life. So I chose life rather than whatever might have been a slight intrusion. And it didn't matter one way or the other. There's nothing wrong about them knowing everything that I do and what I'm doing. And that's fine. So the technology is absolutely stupendous nowadays. And without them, it just wouldn't function. And I wouldn't even be functioning here. So it's really, really unbelievable. So technology is great. In fact, I think it's later on in the month, I've got to go through to another surgery. And so I'm very thankful for all of it. But this is also what needs to be done. Just like you have to go to a hospital to get these things fixed, you also have to go into our political agenda and find out what's appropriate. And no matter how you define the dogma, what we need to do is possibly get away from the dogma of one political perspective or another and define what works for our community. And that is not necessarily defined by one political dogma or the other. And we may need to revisit this whole concept. At the same time, we need to have a greater balance between the different parties. And they should be able to bring what is pertinent from one to the other. And we can borrow from one another in order to make it a better outcome. And that's really important. Well, today's Wednesday, tomorrow's Thursday. We should be doing an automotive review with a driving me crazy crowd. And so we'll speak to you tomorrow. We've only got a few seconds left. So I want to thank you again for being with us. All the best to you all. And take care. Goodbye.